Hello and welcome to the Dallas Soccer Show. I'm Dustin Nation. I'm here with Tristan Vick. How are you doing, Tristan?
I'm doing well.
And we're going to talk today about FC Dallas and their match against Vancouver Whitecaps FC. And we're going to also talk a little bit about transfer rumors swirling about FC Dallas. So let's get started. So this past weekend, Dallas traveled up to the Pacific Northwest again, their second weekend in a row to be up in the piney area of the country. Although this time it was a little bit different than against Portland Timbers. They seemed to play a lot better. What do you think, Tristan?
I thought so as well. I think it made a big difference to have Matt Hedges back in defense, helping command the back line. He's been a huge, huge rock for that defense. And when he's in the lineup, the chances of a clean sheet being kept by a Dallas go up exponentially. I thought that Acosta being back meant that you weren't going to have as many errant passes. Just having the experience that they both have between Acosta and Hedges was a game changer in terms of the side itself looking like an actual team and not just a team that was put together to kind of go play, which is kind of how they looked last week at Portland.
Yeah, I agree. Last week they kind of looked a little bit haphazard, and this week they definitely looked as if they were a cohesive unit. You could definitely tell when you're watching the game, Matt Hedges was back there and he was yelling at people, he was organizing things, something you didn't really see last week whenever Harris and Walker Hume were back there.
Definitely. And moving Atiba Harris out to the left, letting Figueroa play at center back, I think it shows that Oscar Pereja really likes Dallas to have experienced defenders whenever they go on the road against teams like Vancouver. I thought it was kind of funny that they were playing against Vancouver and Vancouver decided to start Breck Shea, former FC Dallas product, who plays out on the left. And Breck Shea is somebody who, just for whatever reason, has always been highly rated but never shows up. And I thought that starting Breck Shea, they hope to get some sort of a rise out of him going against his former club. And ultimately, he didn't really have much of an impact on the game. Gets subbed out in the second half. Really was shut down on the right side.
Yeah, you've got to give Grana some credit there. I give Grana some stick every now and then, as you know. But he definitely did a pretty good job of quieting Shea out on that Vancouver left side.
Yeah, and Breck Shea is the type of guy that has a man bun. And I kind of feel like there's a rule for people with man buns, especially in sports, is that you can aggravate them much easier than you can somebody else. And so by frustrating him and making it tough for him to get some real crosses into the center, ultimately Breck Shea was almost non-existent the entire match. I thought that Freddie Montero, the forward for Vancouver, really was isolated at times. He had some good interchange with Teixeira and Tichani.
For sure. Yeah, Minor Figueroa did a pretty good job marking Freddie Montero there in the center. You could definitely tell that Minor was up for the game, and he wasn't going to let Freddie Montero get sneaky on in there.
No, he wasn't. And I mean, the thing about Freddie Montero's game is that he is very dangerous. He's explosive. He's a very good center forward, but he can't do it all on his own. He doesn't have the size to do that. And if you have a defense that is not only reinforced now with the return of Hedges, but also feels more confident overall, then it's going to be a lot tougher to get those types of opportunities that somebody like Montero excels at. So definitely having internationals back made a big difference. But I also thought that even some of the regulars, they had one of their best games of the year. I think Rudy not only finished well when he had the chance, although I thought the keeper could have done a little bit better to block that shot and to make that save. But I thought the pass and the setup for Arudi to make that goal was great. And Arudi shows that he can be relied on to score goals. I was reading that he's only gone 4 games this season without scoring a goal, which means that he's still being consistent.
Definitely.
With that goal, he's almost at or he's exceeded his entire season goal tally from last year, and we're not even halfway through.
And And goals are only just a portion of what he brings to the table. If you watch that game towards the second half when Dallas really started picking it up and putting pressure on, and ultimately when he scored his goal, it was because they were putting on that press and he just never stopped running.
I agree. He definitely kept making some opportunities. I thought that he was able to have some successful passing, which is always good, but he works really well with Barrios down the right-hand side. I thought that one thing about Barrios that I was a little bit upset with was just that he seemed to be drift in and out of the match. And I've noticed this last year with Fabian Castillo before he left, but basically, Barrios is somebody whose speed needs to be utilized, and the way to best utilize that speed is to obviously get him in one-on-one situations with the defender so that he can go by them. But if there's nowhere for him to ultimately cross the ball when he gets to the flag or the end line, he's not as effective, and it just looks cool that he's fast. And so
sure,
he needs to be a little bit more aggressive in taking the ball to the inside. I know that that was one thing that made Castillo so much more deadly, was Castillo would take the ball to the inside often and force things, and sometimes it never came off, but when it did come off, it was a thing of beauty. And so I think Barrios will see that when he looks at the tape. I think they'll kind of recognize how the passes that he's making need to be passes that not only have a high success rate, but that also create some chances and some opportunities that they can convert into goals.
It's definitely been interesting how they've been using Barrios. You mentioned how he kind of floats in and out of matches, but he also will switch from side to side. You just look up and he's on the left now. Oh, wait, he's on the right now. And so you can see that they're trying to get some dynamism in the forward play, trying to get the ball up the flanks. But I agree. I totally agree. More often than not, push it past that last descent defender with his pace and then just kind of whip a ball in, hopefully, and hope someone's there. And rather, you kind of want to see him be more aggressive and cut inside and try to take a goal every now and then.
And I think that if you're looking forward to the Houston match coming up this weekend, which we'll talk about a little bit more, he's going to be going up against DeMarcus Beasley. He probably will need to stay on the right more to keep Beasley busy, to keep Beasley occupied, to open up space for other players. And Grana, despite how hard you've been on him, I thought had a great match with regards to the crossing. He actually put some pretty dangerous balls into the middle. The finishing of those balls and the first touches weren't always there, but he was able to create some good opportunities. And I think that if you can overload the right-hand side, which is what Dallas tends to do, especially on the road, you'll be able to create more opportunities for Arruti to get involved and hopefully for Tesho to get on the end of those, because right now Arruti's doing all the heavy lifting when it comes to scoring, and you can't be relied on all the time. And the other people need to be start putting the ball in the back of the net. And whenever Diaz comes back into the side, that's going to be a huge game changer. And so they'll need to be at the top of their games in order to really make Diaz's contributions known. So I'm hopeful and I'm optimistic that this was the first game in hopefully what is a little bit of a turnaround in the slump that they've been having.
For sure. They definitely looked a ton better with their internationals back. They played better defense, better team play overall. But let's talk about that equalizer from Vancouver. As it played out, the Whitecaps were on attack, and the ball was kind of bouncing out in front of the box, and Barrios decided to kind of try to flick it on out with his foot, got his foot up high and made contact with a Vancouver player, got found guilty of the foul right there in a very dangerous area, and the rest is history. Teixeira just whipped that ball right into the top right corner. I guess it would be Jesse Gonzalez's left. So let's talk about first the foul. Was it a good foul? Like, was it necessary? What do you think?
Yeah, so I thought that one of the things that really makes the foul unnecessary is that the ball is heading out of the 18-yard box. There's a defender already back behind Barrios. So if Barrios, for whatever reason, loses the challenge, it's not like there's going to be an open goal-scoring opportunity. And additionally, Barrios obviously wants to go, 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 go. And so that type of mentality is going to lead to some of these rash decisions or rash challenges where he's trying to hit this team on the break and on the counter. And when you're 5'6", going against somebody bigger than you, and you use your foot, chances are you're going to come near their face. And so it's not so much that he shouldn't have challenged for the ball, but it's the way that he went about it. It seemed a bit reckless. And also in that situation, I don't believe there was much up there for him to work with once he did get the ball. And so I think going forward, you're going to definitely see Barrios be a little bit more hesitant at times, but I still think that they're going to use him as a dangerous weapon. So I wouldn't put it 100% on him, but it's definitely not a challenge that he wants to make again.
True. So once the foul's been called, the Whitecaps line up two players over the ball. I forget the first player. The second player was the goal scorer, Teixeira, who's got a wicked left boot. Jesse set up a four-man wall on the near post. The first player runs over the ball. Then Teixeira just dipped it over the wall and up into the upper 90.
It was a great free kick. It's funny. I mean, between Barrios and Teixeira, I mean, you're looking at a grand total of... They're both, one's 5'4", the other's 5'2". So the funny thing about Barrios is the way that Barrios is able to get out there, he's a quick guy, but Teixeira is the same sort of thing. He's small, very low center of gravity. I wouldn't say Messi-like, but the way that he hit that ball was one that anybody's going to have a tough time getting to. Whenever keepers get set on free kicks, what you want to look for is in the run-up that the taker of the free kick has, when he's running up for the ball, what are the knees and where's the butt of the goalkeeper? Because if the butt of the goalkeeper is going down and they're actually getting into a squat, then they're ready to explode and they're ready to spring. But if they're still moving their feet and they're not planted and they're coming up and they're still adjusting, then they're going to be flat-footed whenever that kick is taken. I find that Tim Howard often has that issue in free kick situations. He gets the wall set, he's good to go, and then oftentimes he is either moving around or isn't set, and sometimes he can't get some of the other easy free kicks. And that's something that you saw with Jesse that people have criticized, but at the same time, where he put the ball was nearly ungettable. I think that even if you look at some of the bigger keepers like Buffon, that they wouldn't be able to reach that. It was a type of free kick that didn't have a ton of pace on it, but had enough pace that you really had to guess right to get it. And at the end of the day, Jesse was screaming at his wall for not getting it, but I mean, the wall did all they could. It was just a really good free kick.
Yeah. I think Kellen Acosta had a small chance to get his head on it, but it really wasn't much there for Acosta to deal with. But yeah, you saw some criticism from Jesse. You think that, you know, when the first player runs over the ball and Teixeira comes up, you pretty much know where that ball is going to go, but he didn't move at all. But like you said, I don't think that there was much of an opportunity to save that shot either. It was pretty dang good.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's the type of free kick and the type of location of a free kick that is always going to be dangerous. And it's always going to be something that you look back at the match and say, kept a clean sheet when it came from open play. At some point, you kind of have to ask yourself, why are we committing these silly fouls? And why are we committing them in places that are going to cause us to lose points and drop points? And I think that if Pareja is wise, he'll have them thinking about something else and moving on. Because for a goalkeeper, that's got to be an annoying goal to let in, because he was actually playing really well the entire match and had made some, like you said, some great defensive saves, playing a little sweeper keeper. But ultimately, going to Houston this weekend, he's going to be expected to really step up. I think that you still stick with him. I don't think that Pareja will switch him out for Seitz just because he wants to keep that stability on the back line. But I think he may take him aside and say, hey, look, let's forget about this one and move on. You played a great match and don't let it bother you going forward.
Yeah, the more experience he gets, the better.
Definitely.
Okay, so let's kind of switch gears a little bit and talk more, a little bit more macro for FC Dallas.
Sure.
So FC Dallas are arguably in a little bit of a mini slump, if you will. They've only won one of their last six games and haven't won since April 22nd, if you exclude both Real Salt Lake matches.
Right.
To be fair, there's a lot of draws in there, but it seems as if they're not being clinical and not grabbing the 3 points whenever they're there to grab.
Yeah, I think that the biggest problem with FC Dallas lately has been that these international breaks really do create a sense of a disjointed season. The other problem that you had was the Houston match that they had a 0-0 draw, really could have gone either way, but there was really no finishing and chances and opportunities that were created were never really capitalized on. But if you look forward, they've got some chance to make up some of those points. And obviously, they play the Dynamo on Friday, but the Dynamo, obviously, are one of the best teams in the West. So I think the FC Dallas will really be up for that match because they'll feel hard-pressed from their past away performances at Houston, where they've really gotten shellacked. I think that the biggest step will be moving beyond that match and looking at Toronto coming up on the 1st. Mm-hmm. Happy birthday, us.
Little known fact, both Tristan and I share a birthday on the 1st.
Little known. Now it's widely known.
Everyone in the world will know.
Exactly.
All six listeners.
That's right. And so
most of them are our family.
But if you look past that, then you have Toronto, which is obviously one of the best teams in the league. But then DC United, one of the worst teams in the league. We've got mm-hmm. Montreal away, one of the worst teams in the league. And then we follow back up with a home visit from Vancouver, where I think Dallas is going to feel like losing that clean sheet, they're really going to want to make a step forward. So I can see where you're looking at the past matches and saying it's a slump. But I would also agree that there's some good opportunities to pick up some points going forward. Got that home run.
Yeah, they just have to do it.
Got that home run, you know. I mean, it's a July 1st with Toronto FC. I think winning that match would go a long way to boosting the confidence as they enter the second mm-hmm. half of the season. In between that, they've got the Open Cup match here at home. They're going to be rested. They're only going to Houston this weekend. They really don't have a lot of excuses going forward. I mean, pretty much everybody is healthy but Zimmerman. The only thing that could potentially change the expectations is if we got another injury or if there was some signing that we haven't heard about yet. But I think that there's...
Which we'll get to in a moment.
Yeah, exactly, which you've got some stuff on. But the attitude of the club has got to be positive after this match. And so as much as they are in a slump technically, they're not drawing... They're not winning a lot of points. They're dropping points on the road. They're not taking all 3 points at home. I think the club really understands that it's now or never as far as making a charge for the top of the West. I mean, they always start the year with a ton of games in hand because of the CONCACAF Champions League, but it's starting to catch up to them now. They can't really use that as an excuse anymore.
Yeah, and you know, you just mentioned not looking backwards. I just want to look back just for one more quick stat. FC Dallas has scored 22 goals in MLS play so far this year. And if you take away the 9 from playing Real Salt Lake, that leaves them with just 13 goals in 13 matches. Not a stellar tally there by any means, but like you said, much opportunity going forward.
Yes, absolutely.
Positive thinking.
There you go.
Okay, so we thought we'd take a little time and talk about things that are going on off the field with FC Dallas. We've talked about a lot of the on-the-field stuff and thought we'd take a little sidetrack here. One of the aspects of any major sport is trading players or acquiring new players and new talent to your team or selling players. And we thought we'd take a little bit. I know I am new to the MLS, and so I actually looked up the rules to the MLS transfer windows. And so I thought I'd take a little bit of time just to explain what I've learned. And Tristan, if I am errant, please correct me.
Hey, I'm all ears.
Okay, so in the MLS, there are 2 transfer windows. The primary transfer window is, for this year, it was February 14th through May 8th. So it's in February, May timeframe. The secondary transfer window is the July 10th through August 9th transfer window. And the secondary transfer window kind of lines up with the transfer window that most of the rest of the world uses. I'm a little confused by the primary transfer window not being in January like it is in England and most of Europe, but I digress. I guess it kind of makes it a little bit better in that outside of those transfer windows, clubs can transfer or loan players to any non-MLS club at any time, but it is subject to the transfer window of the club that the player is going to.
Right, so you can make you can sign players to an MLS team in the MLS windows. However, you can only sign players from an MLS team in your league's window if you're not in MLS. So what I would say on the transfer window is last year there was some big transfer activity for FC Dallas. Probably our best player, one of our best players, Fabian Castillo, was the subject of some transfer speculation to move to Turkey and ultimately did make that move. It was probably one of the worst orchestrated moves I've ever seen in my life, but nonetheless, it happened. The biggest change to the squad after that then was not having this speedy winger. So I think that this year, I don't know that we'll be too active. I think that if there was any place that we would see any activity, it would be, I think, up front or at the back, depending on the extent of Zimmerman's injury. And Perea's not usually the one to make a large splash or a flashy buy or some signing to the squad.
Yeah, when you've got the academy that he has backing him, it's a lot easier to use those homegrown players than go out and buy them.
Yeah, and honestly, he is huge on the Latin American players. He loves the South Americans. And so if you were going to speculate about who he would bring in, you would naturally look to those first. I mean, I know that James Rodriguez at Real Madrid, Colombian international, is looking for a new club. I don't think that FC Dallas can afford him.
Probably not.
But hey, one can dream. He definitely would get more playing time here.
That's for sure. So looking at Paper Talk recently, there are a couple of stories floating out there about some players that are quote-unquote ready to make the move to FC Dallas. The two that I've seen this week are Hugo Rodallega.
Rodallega,
there you go. I'm so Texan.
It's okay, he's from Oklahoma. Yeah, Oklahoma, you're right. So Texans would know how to say that.
And then McNelly Torres. Hey,
there you go.
I got a pronunciation right, ladies and gentlemen.
You got one.
So both of these players, I don't think they make a whole lot of sense. They're both over 30. They're both going to be a little bit more expensive than they're probably worth. I don't see them adding a whole lot of aspects to the team that we don't already have. And in fact, the FC Dallas official site has come out with a question and answer session and pretty much put these in the rubbish bin. So
yeah, we'll see. But I think that if anything, it might be a loan signing, or they could do like what they did last year, where they signed a couple of classic last flag type players that can give you a good 30 minutes and that's it. But I think we stand put. I don't think anyone's going to leave. I don't think they bring anybody in that's too substantial right now. Don't rock the boat when you're just trying to steady the ship.
Sure. I mean, having internationals back is practically a transfer in, right?
Yeah, I would agree.
And when you get Walker Zimmerman back, you've bought a new center back.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about Friday's game against Houston. We've kind of touched on it a bit with one of the keys to the game being the play of Grana and Barrios on the right side of Dallas's right pitch against DeMarcus Beasley.
Mm-hmm.
But what else should FC Dallas be prepared for?
So, I mean, I think that if you're going to really look and break down what Houston's threats are, I think it starts with the midfield and it starts with making sure that Eric Torres is unable to get the ball in space. Just like we saw when we went to the match here in Dallas, he is somebody that can be very dangerous when he's given the opportunity. And he's somebody that's not going to pass up opportunities to put the ball in the back of the net. He's got 10 goals already this year in MLS. He definitely takes some shots. He's got almost 3 shots a game, highest on the team. But even more importantly is he will definitely be wanting to get back on the score sheet against Dallas for that home crowd. He's got a bit of a mixed love-hate relationship when it comes to playing against Texas teams just because of who he is. And so I think that'll be a fun one to watch. I also think that when you look at how Houston sets up defensively, it's going to go a big way to whether or not we see a lot of action from Mauro Diaz, which I'm going to go out there and say that it's time to start letting him play a full 90 or at least get the start, because bringing him on as a super sub, he has, in my opinion, failed to really impact the match.
Agreed.
Especially with somebody like Ricardo Clark in there, somebody that will be very physical. I think you got to throw him in there. I mean, if he's healthy, he's healthy. If he's not, don't play him. But they've been playing him, so he's got to be healthy. And
yeah, I think they probably held off on starting him against Vancouver just because of the artificial turf and the nature of the injury he's recovering from. But I definitely agree. I think it's time for Diaz to make a start. I think that he always tends to grow into the game. And if he comes in, if it's the last half hour of the game, then he's doesn't have time to really fully exert his influence on the game. And it took a while against Vancouver for him to really warm up. And he never really, the times that he got the ball in front of net, he didn't really take his chances very well. He just kind of lobbed it right at the keeper. So, well, hopefully starting will help him overcome that and kind of get back in the rhythm, get the adrenaline flowing right, you know, because it's a different feeling starting. You get a different adrenaline rush than you do when you're coming off the bench.
Right.
All right. Well, that's about our time for this week. We'll be back again next week, and we'll be discussing the battle for El Capitan and see who's coming home with the glorious, glorious trophy that is a king. Thanks, Tristan.
All right, Dustin. You too.